Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this edition to the War Report. I am talking to you from New York City. The trip has started, but the main journey of documenting the people's story will take place after my TED Talk this coming Wednesday, and I'll start going out to other locations, and that part will start. But been here on the East Coast for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 days, and I'll tell you more about that towards the end of the show. Today, we are going to probably, this is going to be the format for the next possibly couple of months, that I will report on Sunday from wherever I am at that particular time, and I will have someone from that city, that locale, who's involved in the war as a resistor on our side. And today we're going to start this whole thing off with a person who's been on the show previously, Mr. Jamal Bowman. He is a principal of a public high school here in New York City. And yesterday, he and his colleagues gave a fantastic one-day conference that we're going to talk about today. I won't try and steal any of his thunder because there's a lot of thunder to be had from this experience from yesterday. Don't laugh, Jamal. And let me also say that, you know, Jamal is a friend. He's been on the show several times. And you know how I am with my friends, in that I go nuts sometimes. And today won't be any different. I'm going to have fun with Jamal, and you better be prepared for it. I'll put you on the hot seat in a minute, dude. Okay, here we go. Mr. Jamal Bowman, people. Hi, Jamal.
Hi, Dr. Miller. How you doing?
I'm okay. We finally met yesterday.
That's right, so cool. Yes.
That was so cool.
Yes.
Folks, when I...
Yes. That was awesome, yes.
When I came into the school, Dr. Turner and I were together. As you know, I came in first to Connecticut, and he and I drove down Saturday morning to the conference. And when we came in the door, and after a few minutes, Jamal came in. He looked up. We saw each other. We ran over to each other, and he gave me the biggest bear hug, and I gave him my little frame bear hug. And it was so cool, man. Thank you so much for being a friend, being a warrior in the war with us, and for yesterday.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come on out, coming all the way out from California, not just for us, obviously, but I really appreciate you taking the time to stop by our event. And it was very exciting to meet you. I know your background. I know you've been in this work for 40 some odd years or more. And I'm really honored to know you and have been on your show, and honored to be, you know, continuing this very important work with you. So it was just exciting to see you. And I also hadn't seen Jesse since, you know, the News 12 story on his walk when he stopped through the Bronx on his way to D.C., and I got to meet him there along with Mark Nason and our kids. So it was just inspiring and empowering to meet you and see you too. And, you know, I just continue to be invigorated, you know, as we do this work.
You see why I have him on, people, right? You know, he's boosting the ego a little bit for me, and I need that occasionally. Jamal, let's start with the title of your conference.
Yes. Yeah, so first of all, I partnered with some amazing educators and activists on this conference. I partnered with teacher Ms. Gia Lee, who's also with the MORE Caucus of the UFT, United Federation of Teachers, really trying to shake things up with the union and make sure the union does its job. I also partnered with Michael Flanagan of the Badass Teachers Association to help put this event together. Dayu Suzuki was also a part of our planning. He's with Reclaiming the Conversation for Education and also a PhD student at Columbia. Hugh Jordine, a Columbia staff member, also worked with us, as well as Janine Sopp of NYC Opt Out, and she was one of the first parents in New York City to opt out. So the name, after some conversation, pretty much came from Gia, to the call to action, Lean In for Educational Justice. I think it was a perfect name because that's exactly what it was. It was a call to action, call all over the city. We had people from all over the city, people from outer boroughs, people from upstate, people from California like yourself and others, just so we could have and begin some critical conversations and work around the biggest issues in public education. And that's exactly what happened. We had an amazing, diverse group, teachers, parents, activists, students, and so on, of all race, class, creeds, colors, working together to have these conversations. And that never happens, or that rarely happens. So we were happy to start the conversation yesterday.
And you had subspecies like me, so... You covered the, you know, I think you should, I can include myself in the humanity chain and all.
Absolutely.
So, the conference, you started off the conference with several people speaking that were on the platform, and then we broke out into the various sessions. Those people on the platform, I was blown away. Many people, of course, I didn't know anyone other than Gia, who especially served as a moderator. But the people that you had there, Michael Flanagan, I've never met him, and I didn't get a chance to really meet him at the conference. But loved his framing of the situation. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you something that I think I've only told maybe one or two people since the conference. It was the mother-daughter team, and I won't call their names, blew me completely away. What they did is exactly what this road trip for next 2 months and possibly most of this year, next 12 months, is all about. They told the people's story as it related to them, and how the daughter, who is, what, an eighth grader, I think? An eighth grader, her experience when she and her mother, I'm not even giving a short version of this, but basically when they decided to opt out and what happened in her school and in her classroom to her as a potential opt-outer, and then how it was handled. That story, and if you remember that story in detail, you asked me earlier about the research that we're doing, the documentation we're doing. That was the essence of what I'm out here to do. And if I had to stop yesterday at the end of their speech and go back home, that story in itself would be the story that I would carry forth forever. So I had to
Absolutely. I agree with you. And first of all, just the format of it, the way the mother and daughter shared the stage together and kind of, you know, piggybacked on each other in telling their story and the story of them opting out, and the story not just of opting out, but their experience in public in their public school. You know, the way the mom and daughter so eloquently expressed the shift in classroom instruction and pedagogy and teacher behavior from second grade to third grade, I thought was very striking. How, you know, she mentioned how in her early grades, she loved school. She enjoyed school. She adored school. She loved math. And then she said in third grade, something changed. And as we know in New York State, third grade is the first grade that, you know, the students are tested. So she just said it was a huge shift. And the teachers began to teach to the test. Things were not as engaging and fun anymore for her as a student. And everything was just about the exam. And she became very stressed, very ridden with anxiety, and began not to like school and not to like learning. And we know this happens with students all over the state and all over the country. And they eloquently, as I said, told that story. And thankfully for them, I believe she took the third grade exam, maybe even a fourth grade exam, but they have been opting out, ever since. And she's now in the eighth grade. Looking at consortium schools that require more authentic assessments and more portfolio-based assessments. So that's a beautiful thing. And there's one thing she said that I tweeted out yesterday during the event. She said on the state exam at the end of the year, you know, all you get is a score. You know, you get a level 2 or a level 1 or a level 3 or whatever. You don't get any additional information about the exam, whereas exams in the classroom, you get to know what you got wrong, why you got it wrong, and you're given an opportunity to fix it and learn from your mistakes. And I think that phrase, learn from your mistakes, is such a powerful one and something that is a lifelong skill that we as adults, for as long as we're going to be on this earth, we need to learn that skill. And the way the exams are rolled out and handled don't ever give students the opportunity to do that. So I thought that was a powerful statement that she made there.
I did have an opportunity to talk to she and her mother after we broke off with the sessions. And I want to tell everyone, when I come back to New York, they are going to allow me to interview them for my project. And nice. Since I will be here at least one Sunday, if not two, the next time around, they are going to be on that first show that I can do from here based upon the project.
And yeah, can I jump in real quick and just give you like a super big shout out?
I need
to give you a shout out for this.
I don't care. You're my friend. I can tell you hell no. But yeah, go ahead, man.
This People Story project that you're putting together is so needed and so timely because we've been silenced. We've been silenced by mass media. We've been silenced by our government. We've been silenced by our schools in terms of what we think is important for public education and what's important in our own communities. I've been teaching in education now for 16 years. It's my seventh as a principal. I was a teacher and dean for 9 years prior to that. And no one has ever asked me what I felt about curriculum, instruction, assessment, or anything. And I've been a teacher and a principal that's had quote unquote good results. So the fact that you're doing this People Story, and the people include me, but most importantly, it includes students and a mom, is really awesome. So I'm really happy to support your GoFundMe campaign. I'm going to share it via Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage others to support it because we need to hear from the people, and we need to start empowering the people again. So thank you, Dr. Miller, for that.
Wow. You know, I've been searching for a reason as to why I like you. I just found it. We have a caller. Let's go and get our caller if the caller is still there.
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello. Who's
Hi,
on the line?
Hi, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
My name is Michael Flanagan.
Michael Flanagan.
Yes.
What's up, Mike?
Let me stop. I got to break in, Michael. This is the guy that I just mentioned his name. I was sitting next to Mark Nason, and I was sitting two chairs from Mark. And when Michael was up giving his thing, I wrote Mark a note. Do you know this guy? I would love to have him on a show. And Mark wrote back, and I have it right here. He says, yes, I know him well. I will connect the two of you on Facebook. And here you are. Michael, I was really blown away with your talk yesterday. So now take it from there.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I know Mark Nason really well. I owe him a lot for being one of the founders of BATS, and I was really happy to see him yesterday. I didn't realize you were there. I just wanted to publicly thank Jamal for letting me be part of the event and help him plan it, and just say how much respect I have for him as a principal. And I wish more teachers had the opportunity to work with a leader like he is. And it was a great event, and I was very happy to be part of it.
Michael, I don't like Jamal that much. Okay, you know, you come on and give him these great kudos. Okay.
Hey, all you guys,
Gia, whom I happen to know, and Will has been on the show and will be on again. We talked about that. All you guys did a great job in terms of planning this, and which brings Michael, stay on the line if you can.
Sure.
What made you guys decide that one, you had to do this? Do it the way we always sort of like talk the way in which you've done it, but why now? And what was happening that made you guys say we got to do X and we got to do it now?
I'm going to let Jamal answer that because Jamal and Gia were spearheading it. I just got in late to the party and just said, "What can I do?"
Well, he wasn't that late. So, first of all, thank you, Michael, for the shout-out. And, you know, I have to shout you out right back for all your dedication throughout the summer, sacrificing your summer months and your summertime to be a part of it. No, Dr. Miller, I mean, we had the reclaiming education conversation in the spring. I'm forgetting whether it was May April or May. And from that meeting, we thought it would be, you know, feasible or nice or opportune moment to put together an education conference. Up in the Bronx, we had recently had one and had about 250 people in attendance. So I felt, you know, just with the combination of the people in the room, we can have something even bigger and better. So Michael wasn't at that conference, but I believe from that first, he came to the first meeting, the first planning meeting we had with the steering committee, and he was there in full effect, part of all the conversations, contributing to all the ideas. He was not only representing himself as a 30-year educator, which is awesome, but he was also representing the BATS organization. So, yeah, he was there pretty much from the beginning helping out and planning the whole thing. So I guess to answer the question, I mean, there's just so much momentum right now. We feel in our favor against the deformers and the ones who are misguiding the public education conversation and the ones who've been controlling the narrative for so long. We just feel it was time to push back and push back strongly. And we just felt, again, collaboratively with the collective power that we had, we could send a strong message. And I also want to say one more thing. I don't even think I told Michael this yesterday. The governor's office was at the conference yesterday. as was the DOE, NYC DOE. So they're paying attention and they're listening.
Tell the people the meaning of those alphabets. New York.
Say it again?
The meaning of the alphabet.
New York City Department of Education. So just through this collaboration, not just collaboration with us, I mean, there's so many people doing great work. Jeanette Duderman with Long Island Opt Out. You know, I mentioned Janine Sopp with NYC Opt Out. You know, Lainey Hameson. You know, so many people doing great work, and they've been doing great work for so many years. You know, the DOE, the governor's office, they're reaching out, and they want to know how they can be better. Now, we'll see, you know, when he gives his state of the state, if he's actually paying attention and implementing what we're trying to say needs to get done. But if he doesn't, you know what? We're going to get stronger anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Michael?
Yes.
You have anything you want to add to that?
We're talking about the motivation
behind getting together and coming up with the idea of the conference. What was happening from your point of view that necessitated this particular call to action?
Well, I mean, I was asked by Marla Kilfoyle to, I was invited by Jamal through Marla Kilfoyle to kind of represent Batson. Try to help any way I could to contribute, because you know teachers in public schools are being oppressed, and we do want to stand up. So when you have administrators and educators like Gia and Jamal trying to make a difference, we all want to be part of that, because when one person stands up, it helps everybody else stand up. So. Like I said, I was honored to be part of it, and I just wanted to let Jamal know that I appreciated everything he did.
Thank you, sir. We got a lot more to do. We got a lot more to do, Mike, so don't disappear, man. We still got work to do.
Okay. I hear you. Well, enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you, Dr. Mills, for having me on, and I'll let you guys go.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Mike, for calling.
Okay,
Jamal,
yes.
There was a statement in one of your pamphlets on the back of it. You talk about this conference, mm-hmm. and you lay out your strategy and what it is you're trying to accomplish, what the conference was going to try and accomplish then and going forward. Do you remember those points, and can you tell the audience something about what the conference was about as laid out in this particular pamphlet?
Yeah, so this conference was about bringing people together who don't usually get a chance to be in a room together and to begin these difficult conversations around the different components of what's happening in public education. So we wanted to discuss school-to-prison pipeline, high-stakes testing, restorative justice, early childhood education, race, class, and capitalism, and every other issue that's interconnected with those issues. So this conference was about beginning the conversation with a divergent and diverse group of people. Our plan after this conference is for people, this conference was to help people connect in their geographical regions so that they could begin to coordinate more strategically within their locale. So whether it be parents from the Bronx, teachers from Brooklyn, you know, students from Manhattan, what have you, we wanted them to connect at the conference, begin to work in their geographical location and you know, work with politicians as needed, work with other groups, work with corporate. If corporate wants to help out with what we're doing, I don't think all corporate is bad, even though a lot of it is bad. And then come back together with another conference similar to this in the spring. So I guess moving forward, the idea would be large conferences in the fall and the spring with smaller meetings taking place throughout the year in these geographical locations.
Yeah, please make it in the spring.
Okay.
I'll say something more about that in the last part of the show.
Definitely.
you know what? It won't be good. I'm laughing, folks, because I'm going to tell you what has happened to me in the last 5 days, and it hasn't been really great as relates to climate change. Okay, back to what we're talking about here, and that is your focus, and I think you pulled it off very well. You know, build citywide congressional district alliance.
Mm-hmm.
That struck me as probably one, it's not the most salient, but definitely one of the top 2 points of this whole thing. Because I've been talking about it for a long time in terms of we need to come together in terms of the various individuals and groups who we call ourselves the resistance. We are not anywhere near strong enough to get attention, let alone frighten anyone individually. But when we come together and have any kind of numbers that will force people to look up, see us, pay attention, and become concerned about us, and to do it at the congressional level, that's awesome. Because just a handful of people working at the congressional level, especially in big urban areas like you live in and I live in,
mm-hmm.
that can get some attention. And I'm going to just say this. That's going to scare the shit out of some people. You know,
well,
I can do
yeah.
this. You're the principal. You can't do that, but I can say it.
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, the governor's office, the governor of the state of New York, his office was at the conference, you know, and that's because of the collaboration and support and connections that have been made mostly via social media. Yesterday was also like a celebration because I got to meet people that I've only known via Facebook for the last year or two. So it was like, hey, so your name is Marla, your name is Lisa, you're Jeanette. You know, we were kind of like just connecting, just the same way I met you, Dr. Miller. So it was a celebration in that regard, but even just through the organizing and through social media, you know, sharing of information, sharing of blog posts, having intellectual discussions, connecting on private messages, connecting via phone calls, even that was enough. To get the attention of the governor's office. Now, if we, like you mentioned, continue to grow within certain congressional districts, we become now a very influential voting bloc that not only impacts the governor's office, but also state senators, assemblymen, city council people, so on and so forth. We need to put forth, and we did part of this yesterday, a manifesto for public education and make them pay attention to it, because guess what? We have thousands and thousands of votes that can help you win or push you out of your current position. And if you're not going to do right by kids, and that's what I started my talk with yesterday, it's about love and it's about kids. If you're not going to do right by kids, then you don't need to be in office anyway.
I, of course, you know, I heard that, and the whole knowing about the conference and all the things, you know, I mean, just asking a question so that the public can find out all of that they need to know about you and the conference, et cetera. So I already knew that.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to go back to coming together and the group that you were a part of and putting this all together. I talked in the past about, remember the Spartans who stood in the pass, Theopolis Pass, the supposedly
mm-hmm.
300 Spartans, a little more than 300 people. They were other people who were not Spartans per se, so just a little history lesson. But the 300 Spartans stood in the pass, and they were there to try and hold back an invading army of 100,000 Persians, I think it was Persians, and they mm-hmm. were there to try and delay them to give their city-state time to train an army that would be equipped and skilled enough to come and join the battle and save their country. Mm-hmm. I look at what you guys are doing as, how many was it? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven of you, the planning, and then your facilitators. You were the Spartans yesterday, man.
thank you for that. I guess kind of saw that. I mean, but it's, you know, what's the Margaret Mead quote? Never underestimate that a small group of people can change the world. I'm paraphrasing here. I know this isn't the exact quote, but she says, indeed, that's all that ever has, right? So, you know,
exactly.
It started with you know, Gia and I at the reclaiming. First of all, being invited to the reclaiming meeting was awesome. And there were about 25 at that meeting. And then we broke off into groups. And in our group, Gia and I said, you know what? You know, let's put together this conference. So it started with two. And then Dayu joined on board. That was three. And then Michael was four. And then Hugh was five. And then Janine came on later, and that was six. And like you said, with the facilitators, it came out to be about 25 total or something like that. You know, we packed the house yesterday. You know, we had many more register than show up, so we had almost 600 register. It seems like about at its height yesterday, it was about half that, maybe more, a little more than half that. But that's awesome, you know, to have those numbers. And I want to highlight the diversity in the room. So, you know, I was there as a public school principal, and there were other public school principals. There were public school teachers there. There were private school teachers there. There were people from the unschooling community there, higher ed professors, researchers, students, you know, the elders, you know, who guide our work, such as Dr. Miller and Judy Yero and others. It was just the diversity was awesome. And let me say one more thing about the diversity. Diversity also presents its challenges because when you try to collaborate with a diverse group, we all come with, you know, we all come with our baggage, right? Our biases, our, you know, our brains are wired a particular way because of our experiences. So bridging a gap between those experiences and making something work is not always easy to do. So that's a challenge. That will continue to be a challenge, but again, if it remains a labor of love, I think we'll be okay.
Good, cool. We got about 10 minutes, and I want to go to that manifesto for a revolution in public education. Tell the people about this manifesto.
Yeah,
Take it from the top.
Take it from the top. I gotta find it. I don't have it in front of me. But what I wanted to say is just a vision. It's a vision for what public education needs to be. And part of that vision is not just looking at public education. It's looking at the community impact on the school system. So just some of the themes throughout is dealing with issues related to poverty, which then will take us to dealing with issues related to birth to age five, issues related to trauma, then takes us to issues related to testing and how we do testing. It's just a new vision and a new way to reimagine how public education can be redesigned. You know, recruiting particular teachers from the community, getting them into the right positions to serve the right people, supporting teachers with the resources they need, because we know that inner city schools are terribly underfunded all over the country. Right here in New York State, the state owes the city billions of dollars. It was fought for in court. They lost, the state lost in court. And they still haven't paid. It's about $2 billion. So city schools are still they're being starved and then they're being closed because they're not meeting the criteria on an invalid and unreliable test created by a company based out of Britain. So it's just a double, triple, quadruple whammy that's fraudulent. And all in all, we're still not focusing where we need to focus, which is birth to age 5, proper resources, and supporting the social emotional development of kids and the issues in the community. So, you know, that's a summary on some of the themes of the manifesto, but I would love to post it on your page after this conversation so that people can take a look at it, read it and weigh in on it, because, you know, definitely want feedback on it as well.
Well, you have to, given the fact that you're so inarticulate. People need to have a more coherent and articulate version. You knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. You know me. It was coming. You just gave me the opening.
Hey.
Awesome, and both awesome. Jamal is such a gentleman. You know, he's this principal. He is a rising, I'll use the term, you know, he doesn't like, but he's a rising star in the resistance movement, both locally, statewide, and nationally. And he is always, always the perfect gentleman. And I, on the other hand, am his the evil opposite, maybe. So I get a chance to have fun occasionally like this. So, but Jamal, the demands you guys put out, let's see, was it 5, 7, 8 demands? Do you remember them?
Yeah, I want to pull that
out here.
Yeah, let me pull those up because I think I have it here. Let me go to my digital copy because I do. Okay. You know, that's a great question, and let me pull it up. You know, thankfully we have social media, and you know, can help me be a little more articulate.
Well, the first one, right. We demand that every child.
I got it. Hold on. Boom, we got it. So demand number one, we demand that every child have equal educational opportunities. By this, we mean that every child in pre-K through 12 should be provided with the conditions that make possible real study and human growth. Conditions made available at the nation's independent schools to the children of so many education reformers and of the well-to-do and well-connected. Two, we demand that all students have the small classrooms that Jeb Bush and others experience. Number three, we demand that all students have access to the schools with well-stocked libraries, quiet places for contemplation, study abroad opportunities, programs in music and art, regular field trips, a range of sports, healthy food in the cafeteria, well-staffed college counseling departments, et cetera, et cetera. Number four, we demand equal educational opportunities for teachers such that teachers have opportunities to create their own curriculum, which is essential as we move away from standardized high-stakes testing, standardized curriculum, which now leads to standardized teaching practice. Teachers need to be freed. Right now, they are being shackled by the chains of standardization. Teachers need to be empowered. They need to be free. They need to be loved and trusted to be the brilliant, creative artists that they are. And the more they are treated that way, the more students will blossom in that way as well. Number five, we demand that rather than performance standards that focus on test scores and assume punishment is the best way to change people, states adopt opportunity to study standards with metrics and consequences. Such opportunity to study standards assess the conditions that make study possible. So that's five. Number six, we demand a halt to charter schools, which present the veneer of small independent schools, but in fact offer a mediocre test prep program, military discipline, and few, if any, of the numerous opportunities for study available to children of the wealthy backers of those charter schools. This is critical. I was on your show before talking about charters, and they do everything in their power to get kids to pass the test. They don't care about cultural competency. They don't care about character development. They don't care about adaptive skills. They don't care about students managing their own freedom. They care about tests. So they create draconian school cultures to train students to be drones and robots for the 21st century, as opposed to people and humans who can problem solve and change the world. And number seven, we demand that at the community, district, state, and national levels, education summits be held to delineate in detail such opportunity study standards, determine the cost, and establish timelines for these standards to be implemented. Furthermore, we demand that primarily educators, parents, and students be included in these summits, and that media and computer moguls, hedge fund managers, CEOs, and others who know little about teaching or curriculum be barred from participating. So those are the seven demands of the manifesto. And like I said, I will definitely post this on your website so others can see it as well.
And people, you can sign the manifesto showing your support for what we are demanding. And Jamal, you know, there are other people in groups across the country who are doing a similar thing in terms of trying to come up with declarations and manifestos of what we would like to see happen, be it a return to some elements of the past, be it retaining some elements of what's happening right now, and be it ideas for what education, public education, should be like in the future. And all of these, let me just say this, and all of these, what we're basically talking about was the very first words I uttered 19 months ago on the first war report, that when it's all said and done, what we're talking about is what is the purpose of education. When I said just education, I'm talking about public education. Mm-hmm. Everything I believe emanates from the definition of what we want our public education and our public education schools to be and to do, both for the individual students and for the society. Face it, public education is, and schools are major socialization agencies that prepare students to participate in our society or any society at a, by a certain age, and that's what we do. So in terms of the purpose, once we define our purpose, we then have a mission that we set forth for the school. And the people, be it the king, the president, the troika, or whatever, those who control the purpose controls humanity. So what you guys have done in terms of putting out, and this is just my summary or summarization of it and my interpretation of it, you put out a very good beginning document. And I would hope very much that people, if you go to my site or wherever else it's posted, that you look at it, and especially teachers and parents, look at what this document is saying. And look at it in terms of the purpose of education, the purpose we want the schools to do for our children and for other children, for this generation and future generation. Jamal, to me, and I go again, you know, you're just speaking to the choir. So what I'm about to say is what you hear from the choir. Awesome document. Awesome. I see it as a beginning. And I'm hoping, as I just said, others will want to emulate this in their own city, their own school district, their own individual schools, and their own bedrooms, living room, in terms of sitting down, that solo person coming up with other ideas or reframing what you guys hear as a beginning document for us. Love to see this evolve over the next month into a document that thousands, tens of thousands of us will subscribe to and support. So
yeah, and that's coming, key. That's key, Dr. Miller. You know, people, you know, very often because, you know, people have been made to feel so disempowered, they don't feel that change is possible, and they don't understand the impact and the power of their own voices. And, you know, becoming a part of a movement is a part of it's an aspect of letting your voice be heard. And reading the manifesto, offering feedback, signing on, becoming a part of the conversation, attending conferences, that's a part of letting your voice be heard, and it's incredibly empowering. And, you know, many people are distracted because, you know, they're overwhelmed and, you know, or, you know, they allow themselves to be distracted, you know, so they don't get as engaged and involved as we would like them to. But we, you know, again, through collective action that, you know, for us began yesterday and continues to move and go and take place in Seattle, Chicago, and different places, we believe we can grow this thing. And one last point, I was reflecting on, you know, that question yesterday, the purpose of education and what are schools for. And, you know, what I thought of was the phrase, and we've heard this before, to create lifelong learners. And, you know, you heard it before, and sometimes it's gotten to the point of being cliche, but I think that, you know, might be simply what we're doing, because lifelong learning is about just continually growing. Empathy is rooted in that. Respect is rooted in that. Love is rooted in that, not just yourself, but for your fellow human being. And I think if we design our schools and focus on, you know, creating lifelong learners, they can always adapt and adjust to whatever problems they may face as adults and so on, because they've been provided the opportunity to become, to engage with what we authentically are, which is lifelong learners. Cool. So that's what came to mind for me.
Stay on. We have a caller, so let's see if we can get this caller in before we go off.
Okay.
Caller?
Yes, my name is Deborah.
Hello.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi, how are you?
And what is it you want to tell us?
I just want to say that this show has been monumental in all your series, and I wanted to give people a chance to contribute to the project that you're doing called The People's Story. And you can do that at www.thepeoplestory.com. I'm sorry, www.thepeoplestorythewarreport.com. And whether you donate $5, $10, $20, it doesn't really matter. But you are contributing to this very important project that Dr. Miller is embarking on. And it is history in the making, folks. So please contribute. Thank you.
Thank you,
wow.
Deborah. Thank you
wow.
So much, Deborah. And listen, you'll spend $20 on a couple drinks at happy hour, so it's nothing to spend $20 on supporting Dr. Miller and his work.
You know what? Yeah. I like both of you guys. So cool. Because I have been asked by, you know, other people to talk more about the project and tell people about the GoFundMe project that we just put up not even a week ago, and I've been reluctant. I can have fun with my friends here and, you know, do all kinds of silly stuff and what have you, but I'm a little reluctant to like toot my own horn and ask people to contribute, although the project definitely needs it. I'm spending money out of my own pocket now, and it my pockets only carry me so far. But for me to be able to go to the 30, 35 states that I'm going to go to and the 40 to 45 war zones that are just in rage right now, I'm definitely going to need the support of people who care about education and want to support what I'm trying to do in terms of my contribution as a social activist to this war. And so I'm a little embarrassed to do this, but I'm glad you guys have taken a lead for me. Appreciate that quite a bit. Got a big old smile on my face. Jamal,
absolutely.
We got about 3 minutes. Yes, Deborah?
The URL is www.gofundme/thewarreport.
I'm going to have someone put that up on our group page and my personal page and wherever else that person can find to put it so that you can hopefully, if you're interested, you'll go and find a link and click on and be able to support, and it'll be easier for you to do it that way. I got about 3 minutes left. Let me tell you my story. I'm from Los Angeles, you know, and the weather in Los Angeles for this month of October, out of the 14 days that I was there, I left on the 14th, most of the days have been 100 or higher in Los Angeles. We had records breaking days. Nights, California is known for, you maybe have a really warm day, but you'd always have a cool, moderate night. If you had a 100-degree temperature during the day, you would have a 60, 65, maybe close to 68, 69. This time around, we had, and something else, we have dry heat. This time around, we had a lot of humidity, but the temperatures would be in the 80s at night, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. So that's what I left. Now, I knew it was going to be cold here. I was born and raised in the Midwest. Okay, I got here, and we're talking fall here. Last night, the temperature was 32. Tonight, it's going to be 30, 31 and getting colder each night. During the day, it's been sometimes has some sunshine, some little wind, but it's been cold. And basically what I'm just saying is I've frozen my ass off, people. I got sick yesterday. I was losing my voice. I was coughing. I had to stop. We were driving back from your event yesterday, Jamal. I had to stop and get some medication to start taking it so that I could hopefully be able to do the show. But I was going to do the show. I use that motto, the show must go on. But the weather here and the rapid change just has done a number on me. And, of course, I'm on jet lag. I've had maybe 3 hours of sleep per night. So I've been tired, but it's been a ball. Connecticut with Jesse Turner and his wife, fabulous. The first thing they said to me was, my casa, su casa. I got here in New York today for the second time with Mark and his wife, and they said the same thing. Mark took it a step further. It took me, like Jesse, this is what's in the refrigerator. This is what's here. This is what's here. This is your house. Here's the keys. I'm going like, I don't want your keys, man, but here's your keys. You come in and go, and this is what have you. It has been a great 5 days to start the trip, weather be damned. And I met some great people at your event, from people that was on the group page, people who have been my friends since I started, people who listen to the show. They've come up to me, and they've been just so wonderful for us to get an opportunity to meet. So the trip is off to a great start. I do my TED Talk, the first TED Talk, this coming Wednesday. And after that talk, I'll start collecting the people's story. With that, I'm going to have to say goodbye. Have what's left of your Sunday. Make it a great Sunday. And please come back next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance. I said, whoa!